I'm an alcoholic and my name is Gwen T. I'd like to thank Eva Sanchez, the convention coordinator, for the opportunity to speak here this afternoon. What an honor to be with you all and to celebrate AA's 80th birthday. Yay for us. I love parties. For the record, it's very scary up here, okay? My sobriety date is December 27th, 1992. I have a home group, thank you, which is the One Step at a Time group in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. It meets Thursday nights from 7 to 8. I love those people. They continually save my life. Come and join us if you're ever in New Mexico. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I love that AA lineage. I've learned from the best. I continually work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and each time I do, I get a little closer to the truth. This also helps me with resentments. So the topic today is, I'm sure you've all read this before or heard it from the big book, resentment is the number one offender. The book says, on page 64, that, quote, it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have also been spiritually ill. The quote states that resentment is the number one offender. That's an offender of us, all of us, ourselves, our individual selves that we're trying to heal. That's you and me. So we may be offended by a resentment, but resentment ultimately gets us. I'd like to read you a quote from Bill Wilson. Love that guy, don't you? This is a letter he wrote in 1946. It says, quote, just like you, I've often thought myself the victim of what other people say and do. Yet every time I confess the sins of such people, especially those whose sins did not correspond exactly with my own, I found that I only increased the total damage. My own resentment, my self-pity, would often render me well nigh useless to anybody. So nowadays, if anyone talks of me as so to hurt, I first ask myself if there is any truth in what they have to say. If there is none, I try to remember that I too have had my periods of speaking bitterly of others, that hurtful gossip is but a symptom of our remaining emotional illness, and consequently, that I must never be angry at the unreasonableness of sick people. Under very trying conditions, I have had, again and again, to forgive others, also myself. And Bill says, have you recently tried this? So before I started writing this talk, I wanted to really know the definition of resentment. I knew what it felt like, but I wanted to hear what the books had to say about it, so that in so doing I could write this, bring something maybe that you all could take away, and see how it has in the past, now, and in the future affected my life and my relationships with people. So I found this quote, and I just loved it. It says, we read the world wrong and say that it deceives us. And I thought, boy, that's my resentment in a nutshell. I tend to read things wrong. And then I think I've been wronged. Resentment is defined in the dictionary, and this is strong language, people, as the foundation of hatred. It is a negative emotion experienced when we feel we have been wronged in some way. Resentment is a cousin to anger and contempt. And I thought this was interesting. Contempt is when we feel wronged by someone we view as inferior to us. Anger is felt when we are wronged by an equal, and resentment is due to the actions of someone superior. The Big Book states that resentment is a common manifestation of self. When I read that, I said, common? That's not good news for me. Under resentment falls ill will, grudge holding, unforgiveness, spite, indignation, bitterness, grievance, and hostility. Those words are all familiar to me. No matter what the form or how justified I feel, the result is always harmful to me and to others. Old negative feelings recycle themselves in me, and I'm immediately in emotional bondage to what I allow to dominate my thoughts. So I have this thing that I do. It's like a resentment meter. It goes from 0 to 10, 10 being full-blown. So 22 years ago, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a full-blown 10 on the resentment scale. I'm not lying today when I tell you that I had 92 resentments on my first 4-step. My kindergarten teacher was number 10. I'm not kidding you. So today, I know that holding on to resentment puts me at great risk for alcoholism. The Big Book tells me that I'll drink again. And you know what? I believe that. I believe that would be true for me. My goal today with resentment is to be at zip, zero, goose egg. Or, because that's not possible, hasn't been there for me, actively moving in the direction of cleaning up my side of the street. There is huge potential for unhappiness if you stay in resentment. When I'm wronged, humiliated, treated poorly, used, scorned, rejected, embarrassed, denied, belittled, jealous, envious, afraid to lose something I have or not get what I want, I've experienced resentment building over time, and that really festers in me. For me, it was the 30-year resentment that almost ended my marriage that finally got me to a point where I was advised, you know what, Gwen? It's time to let go of that. So how do I know I'm in it? Do you know when you're in it? Are you in it right now? I call it emotion regulation, okay? I can self-diagnose myself and tell what's going on. I'll give you an example. It's like faking happiness with a person to cover up how I really feel. Have you ever done that? It's like speaking in a sarcastic or demeaning way about someone. It's being depressed for me, or despondent. It's being angry for no apparent reason. That's my personal favorite. Or having nightmares or disturbing daydreams about a person, place, or situation. So let me tell you a little bit about me and resentment. I drank alcohol because I craved the effect, and it temporarily relieved me of my discomfort. It was my coping tool. The world was always an uncomfortable place for me without a chemical crutch. As the big book explains, I couldn't control situations, and being powerless over things turned me to anger and fear. I was clueless that resentment was at the very heart of my living problems, and I had a lot of living problems. I didn't identify my negative feelings because I took to the bottle with the very first frustration. I remained in that resentment loop, even in sobriety. I became my negative emotions. Resentment is a debilitating condition, mentally, physically, and spiritually. I ignored this in myself because I was always focused on the resentment, not on what it was doing to me or what I was allowing to happen to myself. I had no peace in my life, and I was constantly angry. I was drained of energy. A long-term effect of resentment for me was that I became hostile, cynical, and sarcastic. That was a barrier for me against all healthy relationships. I experienced a lack of personal and emotional growth. I couldn't be honest with myself. I couldn't be honest with you. I didn't trust you or me, and I had very little self-confidence to live my life. So resentment derails recovery. It's said to create a physical poison in my body, much like alcohol did when I drank it. So in addition to the mental and spiritual maladies with resentment, it feeds that. My drinking fueled every resentment I ever had. So what does the big book say about it? Well, there are 39 passages in the big book that have some form of the word resentment. There are 17 passages, 15 in the big book, and 2 in the 12 and 12, that have the word resentment in them. That's a lot. Maybe you've read some of these. On page 66, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. Page 117, never forget that resentment is a deadly hazard to an alcoholic. Page 145, the greatest enemies of us alcoholics are resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. And page 47 in the 12 and 12, when we harbored grudges and planned revenge for defects, we were really beating ourselves with the club of anger we had intended to use on others. We learned that if we were seriously disturbed, our very first need was to quiet that disturbance, regardless of who or what we thought caused it. I asked my sponsor one time, why do we behave this way? She said, Gwen, we're alcoholics. So how do we deal? What's the solution? I bet some of you know. See if you can figure this one out. First, we identify the source of our resentment. You know what this is? Two, we review the resentment. Three, we identify our reaction. Is it about sex? Status? Are you getting this? Financial security? And four, we name our part. Where have we been dishonest, selfish, self-centered, and fearful? Sound familiar? This is our fourth step. Step four was my first foray into the dark closet of my angry life. Other tools, and these are ones that I've practiced, prayer and meditation, step 11, talk to someone, reason things out, That's step four, step five, step 10. You can talk to God. That's a good one. Step three, move toward a spiritual life by working the steps in order with a sponsor. It's not a solo activity. And this I found for me lately in sobriety really helps. Think about it differently. Just reframe your thoughts. The big book says I must be willing to let go of resentment. To do so, I gotta trust and rely on God. Reach out to God. It sounds simple, but it's not easy, at least for me. And acceptance also helps. Page 417 of the big book, I think, acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, it's because I find some person, some place, something or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be in the moment. It helps to be accepting. So I ask myself, and you might find this a really strange question, why get rid of resentment? Whether drunk or sober, when I've been steeped in resentment, it always felt justified, and this is pretty sick. It sometimes felt fun for me. It fed me in a negative, seductive way. Why? I was a victim. I kind of liked that, though. It was easy. And it subtly rationalized my behavior if I was a victim. There is no such thing as a justified resentment. Most of my life, I've been annoyed or disappointed with people and situations. Excuse me. I've learned in AA to practice acceptance and to learn to look at things in a different way, sort of regroove my record, my old record. So I understand today that resentment doesn't get me anywhere, at least anywhere good, okay? And I learned in AA that the spiritual tools could set me free. So today I avoid resentment and I take measures to manage that. I can back away from a debate. I can distance myself from those that I know are toxic. One of my sponsors said, you know, Gwen, there are a lot of good people in this world. Some of them just aren't good for you. And I can decline to hear the latest gossip. Acting in this way is a matter for me of self-preservation and personal care. Resentment is a trigger for relapse. Not yet part of my story, folks. But I'm not ruling it out. This is a one day at a time. So, my recent resentment experience. I have a granddaughter who's 14. She plays volleyball. I go to every game I can. You know that I feel she's the best player on the team, right? At a recent game, she and another girl, this girl was her best friend, were involved in kind of an altercation on the court. I saw it. My granddaughter's friend yelled at her for not playing more aggressively. I'm feeling it right now. This is not good. Instantly, I began to take this on, forming a resentment towards the other girl and her sweet relatives that sat in the bleachers right in front of me. That's how fast it happens. A few sleepless nights later, I called my sponsor. You know, God bless her. She doesn't let me get away with anything. I wrote a four-step on it. It was pretty short. I kind of knew what was going on. And finally, I asked God for help. I then realized why I was so invested in this resentment. It was about status and pride. A common manifestation of self, myself. So, you know, I don't want to be that woman anymore who can't forgive, who can't accept, who can't move on. I want to be a positive role model for you, the women I sponsor, my family, and most of all, my sweet volleyball-playing granddaughter. So today, I have a different attitude sitting in the stands and a tremendous gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous. So I want to tell you that there's a great solution for resentment on page 552 of your big book, fourth edition, in that story, Freedom from Bondage. If you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you pray for that person or the thing you resent, you will be free. If you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. So ask yourself honestly, if I continue to carry resentment, am I closer to my next drink? Am I earnestly seeking to get rid of my resentments, or am I hanging on to some of them? Do they serve me today? Am I happy, joyous, and free? So I know we don't give advice in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm going to do it anyway. Choose peace, not resentment. Know that living well is the best revenge. Thank you for listening.
Nice job, my dear. Thank you. Thank you, Glenn. Next, from a Great Lakes state of Michigan, Dennis.
Hi, everybody. My name's Dennis. I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad I have someone, a good friend here, great state of Michigan. When I'm in the region, I say Michigan, so I won't go any farther. Resentment, some people must, that's a common theme in Alcoholics Anonymous, it looks like. There's a lot of people here, and I can relate to that. I'd like to thank Gwen for touching on some things that were so true, and you might find a common theme because I need to share that. But as I found as a newcomer, I heard a lot of things over and over again, and some of them I might have resented, but some of them I said, you know, maybe I'm not as unique as I think, or maybe it's something I can use too, you know. So I'm probably going to say a few things she did too, but I think they're so true. I'd like to kind of, in case I don't say it, I want to make it perfectly clear. Right now, you know, resentments, how do we deal with them? As Gwen said, the fourth step, that's right where it is in the big book. Number one killer, when I was wanted to stay sober, and it got my attention when they said that. You know, it really did. And then my sobriety date is January 17th, 1988, and most of that time has been happy, joyous, and free, but of course not all of it. You know, I'm not a robot. Things tick me off occasionally, you know. And as I got older, and actually it probably is a small form of resentment, you know, the first 20 years breezed right along because everything was so new to me, how to live. You know, how to actually live. Because when I drank, it was just existing between drinks. And there was no life there. It was just waiting for the next buzz. And so a lot of things that I never thought would occur in my life started to occur. I noticed the old-timers starting to pass away. People that meant so much to me. My first sponsor. People I sponsored... one in particular committed suicide. All these things happening. My parents, my father passing, my father-in-law, my mother-in-law, my mother getting very, you know, she'll be 88 in July, and watching her get frailer and frailer. And I said, wow, you know, I just never thought I'd have to deal with stuff like this. And although I didn't know it and I tried to do the best I could, I believe I had a small resentment on this big change, you know. But I'll get to that in a little bit. I was a victim as a child because I had no control over the environment I was in. It's that simple. I was in an environment of booze, a way of living that even though I was under 10 years old, under 8 years old, I could still say, this doesn't seem right. And I had no control over what to do. The people that were supposed to protect me, I didn't think they were doing a very good job. And that's pretty terrifying at that young of an age, you know, to realize that. And I had resentments that were totally unfounded. I had the ism before I even took a drink, you know, because that's what I saw. I remember one thing, and I was actual resentment. My dad was going to go to the bar. He was drunk, and he was going to go to the bar, have some more. And I was in the living room, and my mom and dad were in the kitchen. I couldn't see my dad, but I could barely see my mom, and I think she was trying to get him to leave or not to go. And I could hear him, and I kind of peeked over, and I heard the door close, and then I saw my mom was on the ground. So I don't think he punched her or anything. He just kind of, you know, pushed her aside. And she was laying on the ground crying. And it's still very vivid in my thoughts today. And I blamed her. I said, why did you let him go? Why didn't you stop him? So even at that young of an age, seeing what we see as youngsters in an alcoholic family, I just didn't see life as it really was. You know, I saw a twisted kind of way of life. And then I got of age, and you think that'd be the last thing I'd want to do is live like that. But with the ism in me, all I was waiting for was a drink. And I took that drink at a young age, and I was off to the races. And so resentments, now I could do things about resentments. You know, I could really, I could really make them fester. I could really blame everyone. And I still maintain that victim, attitude against society, against people who had more than me that I thought, against family members, older brother who got to have motorcycles and skidoos and I did nothing, and a younger brother who was the baby of the family and, you know, had everything or whatever. I was a middle child. All these things, you know. And I just kept it as I got older and got into the workforce. Anybody in authority was somebody to resent because they put the thumb to you, and I couldn't overcome it. You know, that was my thought pattern, and of course you tend to run with the same crowd, and so we'd find people and we'd get drunk and blame the world, you know, and go and do our thing. So I was pretty locked in that way of thinking for a long time, and then. You get your drunk drivings and all that stuff, and I had quite a few. Had a long list of offenses, but luckily it was in the 70s, and they didn't do that much as they would today. All the charges I got back in the 70s and 80s, I would be in prison today. I ended up going to a treatment facility, and then I got to see a different way. And that's the key, learning there's a different way. And that was just the beginning of. I went to my first meeting at this treatment facility, and I found out that there's a chance. You know, it's for those that want it, not those that need it. Though I was told, and when push came to shove, I didn't quite want it yet. But I saw something there that made me curious. And so I went about 3 more years trying to control my drinking and forming more resentments and against society and those in authority. And then I hit my bottom, thank God. And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had gone to meetings before that, but I just went to try to get a court slip to get my driver's license back. I didn't have a license for 5 years, but I drove anyway, and I bought a new car, actually, without a license. You're not supposed to be able to do that. So I thought, you know, money talks, and you know what walks. I had the bad attitude and negative attitude about everything. But when I really got desperate, and I think that's what most of us need, just enough of that desperation to try things we wouldn't have thought we'd ever try in our wildest dreams, you know. And I went to a meeting 10 days after I got another charge, and I heard the same things I always heard, but this time, for some reason, I thought maybe I could try one of them, or maybe I could talk to somebody I kind of knew in the meeting. So I started doing things different, and I started getting results. They talk about that action. You know, we can say, we can read the big book, we can come in and, you know, as newcomers and just study it the heck out of it. And a lot of times maybe it's just you want to look good or you want to sound good at a meeting, you know. I want to, don't think I'm, you know, I know what I'm talking about, you know. And but if we don't put that action into it, you know, break it down and what is it really saying? And I learned, that's how I learned to get rid of resentments, you know. I had done a fourth step when I was in treatment because it was a requirement. And just like they say in the books, it was really a grudge list. And I stuck to my my family of origin, my dad, mom, two brothers. My sister was pretty cool. I didn't have much, you know, against her. She was probably the most normal person in the family. And so these other ones, I wrote down, you know, some stuff, and it had nothing to do with me. It was them. You know, but luckily I kept all that stuff, and actually it's funny, my insurance paid for my 28-day stay. I went on sick leave. I work at General Motors. I went on sick leave. I had four sick leave checks waiting for me when I got home, and I thought I'd pulled one over on them, you know. And then I got I didn't have to pay the insurance because they covered it, and the insurance bill came to $6,000. That must be why I kept that big book they gave me. I said, this is a $6,000 book. It must have some value, you know. And so but I didn't look at it. I put it in a box. And then I happened to look at that box when I was sober about a year, and I saw this old fourth step. And I saw that big book, and I still had that big book today. And I went through it, and I looked at that resentment list. And the funny thing is, after just about a year, I didn't feel that way anymore, you know. And I realized, I don't know if it was said, it's an inside job, you know. As I got better, as my attitude changed, I was able to let loose of some of that anger and frustration. And for me, it was actually fear, because fear ruled my life as a child and as a drunk, because I wasn't good enough. And I could see things for what they really were. And as Gwen had said, what part did I play in this? And so my next fourth step, I was able to say, you know, and I like that phrase about cleaning up your own side of the street. Why would I want to take on someone else's garbage? I got plenty enough of my own, you know. I just need to clean my side of the street up. And so in the fourth step, I was able to become a little bit freer, where they talk about happy, joyous, and free. Not free from a jail cell, even though I was. Since I've not taken a drink, I haven't had to go to jail yet, but I know there's people out there that can't say that, so that's not really the deal. But it's about the freedom of being okay in your skin and knowing that you got room to grow, and it's going to be okay no matter what. And that's what I realized. I started getting involved. I went to open speaker meeting for 10 weeks at this place, and I started getting a slip signed just to get a license my license back, because they said that's what I needed to do. And I talked to the guy that gave me the signatures, and And after 10 weeks, I remember looking at that slip, and it was that same gentleman, and I said, it's been 10 weeks since I had a drink. Maybe I can do this. And the funny thing is, I started going to a place we call the Log Cabin in Bay City, and they have multiple meetings there. And it was closed meetings, so I said, I need to get to, what are these people talking about? I need to go to closed meetings. So I went there, and I started meeting the people there and listening to them. And the funny thing is, that guy that signed my slip for those 10 weeks, I never saw him again. Never. But I needed him there for them first 10 weeks, you know, to be there, be my anchor, to talk to him when I got there. And it allowed me to communicate. I didn't know it at the time, but because I was a partier in the bar, and we all get along, and I'm a nice guy, you know, I'll come into the bar and see eight of my buddies at a table, and I'll buy a round. You know, hey, let's party. Denny parties, everybody parties. But the thing is, I'm not a nice guy. I expect eight more drinks in return before you leave. You know, and I'll make sure I get them, you know. So I wasn't being a nice guy. It's that attitude. It's that tunnel vision that we take, you know. And luckily, we get into the book and we see the people that come before us, and we watch the people outside of the rooms, because somebody said they were from Missouri today, and it's that show me state. And I remember seeing a few guys that talked really good in the meeting, and they had, you know, they said they had 5 years sober. Yeah, right, you know. And I was watching them and doing stuff. I said, I'm going to watch them for a little while. They didn't see me, and I'll watch them screw up, you know, do something or use a cuss word or something, you know. And but they didn't do it, you know. I couldn't catch them doing nothing. And so I realized this was that action thing that they talked about. And for me, luckily, the resentments kind of just faded out as I got into the book, did the steps, learned how to live. Like I said, it was amazing all the things I could do sober and all the people I could connect with. I got involved with my home group, and I learned that you can disagree without being too disagreeable, you know, most of the time. Go to area assemblies, this and that, and watch people fight and, you know, have the biggest fights. You know, I kind of liked it, sitting back and watch and see who's going to punch who, and it never came to fisticuffs, although, you know, I thought it would. And watching all this stuff happen and realizing that if you have an argument with somebody, you don't have to, you know, enemies for life. That's what I thought it was about, you know. And I realized you just let go, you forgive, you know. And actually, I've learned a lot of things. I see and hear AA everywhere in my life today. I hear Men of the Cloth talk about it a lot in their sermons. I hear, I go to some movies. The classic movie that I remember about things you want to blame, you know, that guy's a bad guy, or that guy, how can you stand him? And there was a movie called Crash with Matt Dillon, Don Cheadle, I believe. And the basic concept was that good people every once in a while do bad things, and bad people every once in a while can't help but maybe do a good thing. And it just showed that you can't judge somebody by one act or two acts, you know. We're made up of a lot of stuff, but that helped me to get rid of resentments, to think, you know, I can't stand that person or whatever. And actually, a lot of times I thought that early in the program was about me, something I was afraid to do and that person wasn't, you know. So like they say, it's an inside job. That's how you learn how to get rid of these things. There's a few funny things I learned about resentments. I'm sure you've heard them, you know. They talk about praying for somebody for, you know, 2 weeks if you got a resentment about them. Someone shared this with me. They told this person, well, pray, you know, pray for them for 2 weeks, you know, and see how you feel after that. And the person went back, well, it's 2 weeks. How do you feel now? He says, I don't buy this. I prayed 2 weeks and he's still alive. So she had to go into a little more in-depth of what exactly, how to do that. So, and also about, you know, all we have really is right here, right now. And if I'm letting resentment ruin my day, you know, all day, what have I done? You know, what have I accomplished? That sunlight of the Spirit, if it's away from me for too long, because I don't believe I'm going to leave a meeting right here, especially this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and go out and take a drink. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Ever since I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't worried that I'm just going to go off and have a sippy poo, you know? That's just not the deal. They haven't no one has told me that. I believe in the book. I know the fellowship will be there for me. I know there's people I can call. I just don't believe it's something that would happen. You know, I'd have to do it. I'd have to feel miserable for long enough, you know, to really turn away from a lot of stuff. And as I was saying earlier, just to kind of close that up, I noticed a lot of things. Like I said, I didn't think all this stuff would happen. And luckily, I've been sober. And there's been some other things that have crept into my mind that is totally untrue, yet I think them. And I say, I know it's not true. Why am I thinking these thoughts? Why can't I get rid of them? I'm sober. That's terrifying sometimes. But I know if I just keep believing. I had that one stretch where my dad passed away, my brother-in-law passed away, my sponsor, he committed suicide. And I was feeling pretty bad for a while. And then I had a relative coming to the program. He called me and said he wanted to talk to me. So I made an appointment with him and went over his house, and in tears he said, I can't live this way anymore, you know. I said, okay, I know some people, and we'll get you involved, we'll get you here and there. And for a second I thought it was like a doctor, you know, he's too close to me, he's my nephew. I can't sponsor my nephew, you know, it's like a doctor thing. But I'll show you some people and I'll get you to some meetings. And so he stayed sober for 6 months, but he shared a little bit that he still was kind of, you know, not feeling all that great, you know. And I said, you know what? Why would I deprive him of anything I would do to somebody I don't even know? I said, let's get in the book and let's do the steps. I'm coming over once a week. And we went through that. And this was right after those deaths and this and that. And I read in the 11th step about you have to avoid that morbid thinking. And it was just five words. And I had to release it. And it said where God is either everything or he is nothing. And I had to make that decision. God is everything. And a lot of that resentment about changing life and that slowly dissipated. You know, but I had to continue. Even today, you know, I got away from some things. And in the last 6 months to a year, I've gotten back on my knees in the morning and at night and said the simple prayer from the heart that they told me would work, you know. Life has been good, exciting. I didn't expect this big a room. Actually, I told a guy, there'll probably be about 200, 300 people in this room, you know. He goes, really? You should have more than that. And I guess I have to tell him he knows more than me. But but life is good today. I'm glad you're all here. Happy, joyous, and free at an international. This is my fifth one. God willing, I hope you all keep an open mind because I've heard some negative things, but Detroit rocks, and we want to welcome you when we come. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. And finally, our third panelist who comes to us from the land of surfing and Beach Boy music, please welcome Lois L. from California.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Hi, everybody. My name's Lois, and I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I want to thank Cesar, our delegate from Mid-Southern California area, 09, for putting my name in the hat. I don't know how I got selected, but it's sure a privilege to be here. I was sitting here looking at this sea of people, and would you believe 80 years ago that Bill couldn't find a drunk, nobody to work with? I suppose he was looking in the wrong places. You guys are wonderful, you're beautiful, and what a privilege to be here. My sobriety date is September 18th, 1961. Yeah, yay, me too. And I need to tell you that I had a sponsor who was a non-sober sponsor. For a while, I had a hard time getting this program. And my last time I was arrested, I did have a little problem with resentments before I got sober. My last arrest was for throwing apples at cops trying to perform their line of duty. So I'm here, you know, I qualify. I ended up in Santa Monica at the Red Apple Motel with carry-out Chinese food in it and with cigarette butts in it, and with a guy that killed people. It was a veteran who killed people when he didn't get his pills. So, you know, I had had some background in AA, and I knew I was in trouble. I had left my kids and my husband. He said, if you ever did that again, you were gone. So I was gone. And I knew I was in big trouble. But I thought, well, maybe I could call Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe they would do something. I didn't think it worked, but I didn't have any place else to call or do. So I walked down the stairs and called the Western office. I lived in Pasadena at the time, but I called the Western. I was in Santa Monica. Called the Western office of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they said they could send somebody to see me if I go back to the room. So I went back to the room, and I remember, you know, I had been drinking for years, but that time that I had to wait from that phone call till somebody showed up seemed like hours and hours. I don't know if the rest of you had that experience, but I paced back and forth. And finally there were footsteps on the stairway, and these two ladies walked in. And this was one of my first recognized resentments in Alcoholics Anonymous. The first lady that entered was beautiful. She was a lovely blonde, and she talked and talked and talked and talked. And there was a little old lady that was behind her that was very quiet and very kind of serene. And these two ladies asked me what they could do for me. And I said, well, I had a couple people in Pasadena who might be willing to help me. One was Marie, who was brand new in the program. So she would call frequently. She said she didn't really mind that I was drinking, but when I popped the beer cans while she was on the phone, she got a little resentful about the thing. So she was okay. I knew that she would help, but I said, please, please don't call Beverly. Don't send Beverly, because Beverly wouldn't pick me up in front of Smiling Joe's bar, you know, when I needed help. So I really didn't want Beverly. I had a little resentment about her. So Marie said that she could come and get me, but it would take a little time because Stan had the car. So I was waiting for these two ladies to show up, and the one that was talking and talking and talking had to go, and I was so grateful she got out of there. And this dear little lady said, why don't you lie down, Lois? Why don't you just lie down? So I did. And she reached over, and she touched me. And it was the first feeling I had of the love, and the love of one drunk for another. And that's one of the two things that hooked me in this program. The first thing that hooked me was the love, and the second was the laughter. And we have it here. It's so precious to me, anyway. I'm getting blank. I said I got up in front of a group not too long ago. I'm 80 some years old, and I just went blank. I made somebody come up and pitch because I couldn't remember my story. It's pretty bad. But anyway, what I find is in Alcoholics Anonymous, I get everything I need, especially all the things that I didn't know, especially in general service. I've taken positions in general service. I was liaison to conventions. And I did it all wrong, I thought. But boy, did I learn a lot about AA. And things I didn't know, I didn't know. And that happens to me every time I take an assignment. It's like doing this talk. Really, I hate to tell you, but I didn't want to do it. But I've learned to not say no to an AA request. So I said yes. And I had the privilege of talking to a lot of people about resentments. Beside Beverly, who was my non-sober sponsor, I had the house mother. I went into Friendly House in Los Angeles, which was a woman's recovery house at that time. And B. Gray had established it, but my sponsor at that time, she later became my sponsor, was the house mother at Friendly House. And she was a loving, loving lady. And I thought, I really need somebody who's tough on me, who would really, really lay down the rules and tell me how to do those steps and so forth. And I had Ruth as a sponsor, and she was kind of a lay minister and very loving and very kind. And I kept thinking she let me off the hook. But today I don't believe that. I think we need kindness and love when we first come in. At least that's what my experience has been. That I was talking to somebody today about the requirement about resentments is the number one resentment we need to get over is our anger and guilt about our drinking and using and whatever goes on. That's the biggest one. And if we can do that, the other ones kind of fall to the wayside. I have a neighbor who I don't get along with. And I get to work on this resentment all the time. It's kind of an ongoing resentment thing, you know, that goes on. This guy used to beat up his wife, and I'd hear this, you know, at the windows and stuff, and I resented him resenting her, you know. And then I married a guy that did the same thing to me, and I doubly resented this thing. And we were divorced, and I was called to jury duty this one time. And it was over a case of a man who was beating up a woman. And when it got my time to talk to the judge, he said, "Is there any reason why you shouldn't be a juror?" And I said, "Yeah, I can't be fair to this guy because I have something left over." And he said, "Well, that's why we ask you all these questions." So I drove home that day, and this guy was standing in the yard, and I thought, "It's time for you to get over this resentment, Lois. Come on, get out." And so I went up and started to talk to him, and he was as nasty as he ever was, you know. And so I tried. I really tried to get over that when I prayed for him. And he moved some other people into the house. And it wasn't too long after that that he disappeared. But these other people, the woman he married and her kids were living in the house. And they had these huge hedges, or I had a hedge that went between the properties. So I would, what is it, mow down the hedge? And I got a registered letter that says, "Do not come on our property without giving us 3 days of notice," because I would go around and pick up all the stuff from the hedge. And so I said, okay. So I cut the hedge down, but I left a little thing in the middle, you know. And my gardener came and started charging me $10 more, but he started taking care of the shrubbery too, as well as the lawn. So that took care of that. But what I find is in this program that I get what I need. I really do. I love you. You all. I think Bill and Bob would have been just blown away by seeing something like this going on. I just think it's so exciting. And I think it's close to my time being up, right? Thank you all for letting me be a part of this.
Thank you, Sweetie.